Turning your Bibles to 1 Timothy chapter 5. 1 Timothy chapter 5, we'll just start there as far as looking at some verses and things. 1 Timothy chapter 5, of course we're seeing the whole idea of biblical finances. We're seeing important truths dealing with material things, finances, all of this. The goal, of course, is wise use of what we have. If you remember, we've been saying all throughout the study that we realize everything we have comes to us from God, and that we're just passing through. And so all the things that we have, the time, the possessions, everything, material, money, everything, they're all just temporary, and we're using for God's glory, and that's what He's given to us, and it's for His honor and glory. We're seeing such things as buying and borrowing and spending and saving and giving and the use and attitude of material things. We've talked about all these different things. Well, this evening, two more areas. Now, if you looked at the title of the chapter, you might not have wanted to come, right? Because it's not the most interesting thing in the whole world. The title of the chapter, are the two areas we're going to look at tonight, is insurance as number one, and number two is taxes. Okay, and we're going to talk a little bit about it, not a lot of detail, but insurance, we're going to talk about the family and protection and insurance and what kind of insurance and what insurance does and for and all that kind of stuff. And then we're going to look at taxes and the very idea of just our responsibility to the government to do what we're supposed to do. And when we mention the subject of insurance, people are either bored and go, insurance, that's all, or they don't think they need insurance, or they're confused. They say there's so many different kinds of insurance. How do you even know what kind to get and that kind of thing? So our goal is, as we go through this, we'll get an understanding of not only a little bit about insurance and everything, but also some issues with taxes and how all that fits together. So let's start with a prayer, and then we'll get into the study. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, what a great night. Thank you, Lord, for each one that is here. What a great time we have as we come together and we study. And Lord, thank you for a study that over these weeks we've looked at all kind of different things dealing with money and possessions and finances and making, you know, spending plans and budgets and just everything that we've seen and the attitude and use of material things. And Lord, you've just shown us so much, and thank you, Lord, that they're very practical things found in the Word of God, and then very practical truths that we can learn and apply in our lives, so that we can be in charge of our finances, we can be on top of our finances, we can be in control, knowing that everything that you give us, it comes from you, and we're to use it for your glory. So teach us, Lord, now as we look at this subject, we ask all of this in Jesus' name. Amen. A survey was done several years ago dealing with occupations, which was, what is the lowest ranked jobs? Now, what they mean by that is, I don't agree with this, but what they're saying is that people say, oh, I don't like them. Guess what number one was? What do you think it was? No, it wasn't a lawyer, but a lawyer's in the top six. The first one was a car salesman. Now, I think that you probably have to say used car salesman, because that's what everybody thinks of. They go, used car salesman, because they're going to rip you off or something, but not every car salesman. Number two, guess what it was? Politician. Guess what number three was? Pastor. It was. Number three was the pastor, was the third lowest rated. Number four, a dentist. Number five was an insurance salesman. And number six was a lawyer. That's the top six lowest jobs. Think about it. When you think about these occupations, why do some people think they're bad? Well, some people, when you think of a dentist, what do you think of? Pain. But, you know, if you've been to the dentist lately, it doesn't hurt at all. You know, when I was a kid, it hurt. But I thought, you know, when I go to the dentist, you get older, you figure, oh, it's going to hurt. You don't feel anything. They're so amazing. What about pastors? Why are they so low? Well, I think that many see pastors who are really not to be trusted. You're not sure what they're going to do. They're always asking for money. They have a lot of free time. They don't do anything. In fact, I've had people say, what do you do besides Sunday? And what do you do the rest of your time? I don't nothing. I stay at home. I don't do anything. Insurance salesman. They're always trying to sell you something you don't need. Isn't that what an insurance salesman does? That's what they think. Well, this evening we're going to look at insurance. We're going to briefly look at this area. The industry's come up with better names sometimes than insurance salesmen. Sometimes they're now called faculty advisor, financial advisors, things like that. Truth is, this occupation can really be a great aid to Christians. I mean, it really could. So we want to talk a little bit about that. We want to look briefly at the subject of insurance, often disliked because of the cost and money and the benefit and all that. But 1 Timothy 5:8. Notice 1 Timothy 5:8. What does it say? It says, if anyone does not provide for his own, especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. They're saying if a man in his family, because remember we talked about the role of the husband as a provider, protector, if he's not providing and protecting for his household, then he's worse than an unbeliever. Well, there's some things that come into our lives that we do not have control over. And we must be as prepared as we can be to take care of our families. And that's one sometimes where the whole insurance thing comes in there. Insurance helps us. You look at the top of the next page, insurance is to provide you and your family in the event of a catastrophic loss or a loss. I mean, if you have car insurance and somebody runs, you know, something hits your car, or you run off the side of the road accidentally and you tear the whole side of your car up, instead of you having to pay $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, you may pay the deductible. That's why you have insurance. Or what if somebody comes to your house and they slip on your sidewalk and fall down and hit their head and they sue you? And you have liability insurance connected with your house. I mean, that's what insurance is for. That's why it's called insurance, okay? So we're going to look tonight, and this won't be forever, so we'll take some time. And if you got questions or comments, you know, just ask me. But we're going to look at four types of insurance, four key types of insurance. Number one, we're going to look at health insurance. Number two, we're going to look at life insurance. Number three, home insurance, homeowner's insurance or home insurance, because there's different kinds there too. And then the last one, of course, is automobile insurance. So the big four. Everybody thinks about it. You know, when I do premarital counseling, you know what questions I ask? Because I make them make a spending plan, and I say, do you have any life insurance? Do you have any health insurance? You'd be surprised how many people don't have either one. And so we're going to talk about it. We'll touch briefly on each one of these. I just want you to have a basic understanding of what they are, how they fit together, how you can best use them in your own personal life and family. So I'm just going to give you information. You have to use it ever how you think is best in your own family. The purpose of insurance, as we said a while ago, is to provide for you and your family in the event of some kind of catastrophic loss or some major loss or something. I mean, you know, if a tree crashes and goes into your house and tears up a section of your house. I mean, you can't say, oh, how much is that going to cost to repair that? Okay, $28,000. Oh, yeah, I'll just go write a check. I mean, there are things that you just don't have money for sitting there on things that you own, on things that you have. So that's one of the things. The purpose really is protection. There's some views concerning insurance. Some people say we should not have insurance because if we buy it, we are not trusting God. I've had people say, if you really trust God, you don't need insurance. I said, really? I've had people say you don't need health insurance because if you really trust in God. Of course, we've been looking at the Christian Science at Sunday school. I guess you don't need health insurance for them because you don't get sick. There's no such thing as sickness or disease or anything, so you're okay there. Just ignore it, you know? And then when you die, people say, well, they didn't really die. We just thought they did. They just look like they're dead, but they're not really dead because you don't die, because nobody dies. That's what my Sunday school class that we looked at last Sunday. 1 Timothy 5:8, I wrote that and we quoted it a while ago. We are to provide for our families. If we don't, we've got to be able to protect our families and take care of those things. There have been people without health insurance, and they have a major illness, and they're really bankrupt for years and years and years to come because there's no way to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars. If you got very sick or you had to go have a heart something, and it's $100,000, $200,000, $300,000. I remember my mother had she had valve replacement surgery. The surgeon was an incredible man. This was in Memphis, and he was an incredible guy. I really liked him. And I asked him, I said, what do you get paid to do a heart valve replacement? He said, $65,000 a time. That's what he got paid. But you know what? I'm glad he can do them, aren't you? I mean, I think a life is worth $65,000. We just don't have it, so what do you have to have? You have to have some kind of insurance or something. But anyway, that's the thing. So we want to think about all these things. Let's start, and let's think about health insurance. Let's start with that one. Insurance is to provide us in the need of some kind of loss with a sickness or accident or something like that. Now, health insurance costs a lot of money. It costs a really lot of money. Have you checked it out lately? Anybody checked out health insurance? How much it costs? It costs a lot of money. Now, why don't people buy it? Number one, I've got some number of reasons here. Number one, is some people are young and they think they don't need it at all. They say, I'm young. I don't get sick. I'm real young. And so I don't really need health insurance. Number two, is some people say, I just don't want to pay that much. I mean, I know I should have it, but I'm not going to pay that much for it. It's just way too much. I know some people that their health insurance every month is $1,500 a month at least, just for their health insurance, for their family. That's, let me think about it. That's, what is that, $17,000, $18,000 a year for health insurance? So some people say, I just don't want to pay that. What are they going to do? What do people do when they don't have insurance and they get sick? Where do they go? Go to the emergency room. Because by law, you can't turn anybody away. Who pays for that? We do. Yeah, we do. The third reason why some people don't buy it is they're just not able to get it. I think they said that about 6% are uninsurable. That's a fairly small number. Of course, a lot of they'll insure you, but then they'll deny everything. Or they'll say, yeah, we'll insure you, but this is pre-existing. So we won't cover this for 5 years. By then you may be dead. You know, so, I mean, who knows? Who knows what they're doing? For believers, we need to realize that we want to be able to provide for our family best that we can in cases of sicknesses. Now, there are a lot of options and all kind of different things. I just want to give you some ideas. But, you know, when you have insurance, a lot of times you'll have a policy and there'll be a deductible. And they'll say, okay, you pay the first $1,500 and then there'll be 80-20 up to the next $5,000. And then after that, it's all paid by the insurance. And so if you go to the doctor and you go to the hospital or something, the first $1,500 you're going to pay, and then you're going to pay 20% up to the next $5,000. And then after that, they pay it all. And so you can sit down and say, out of my pocket, I'm going to end up paying this much money if I go to the doctor or if I go to the hospital. But if you're in the hospital for a number of days and the bill is $80,000, you say, well, I only paid, you know, $2,500 or something of the $80,000. That's how it works. So there's a deductible usually when you do it. Now, I've got here that the higher the deductible, or the higher the deductible, the lower the cost. I have insurance that the church pays for me. My deductible is $4,000. I pay the first $4,000. That's what we have. By the way, I need some money. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. But that's true. So the higher the deductible, usually the lower the premium, okay? So that's what they do. Where they're saying, okay, if you're going to pay this up on the front end, we'll lower the cost here. If you don't have insurance and you get sick or you have this, technically you need to pay it because as believers, we're supposed to pay our bills, aren't we? I mean, so that's why I tell people, do you have insurance? Because what would you do if you had to go to the hospital? What would you do? I mean, so it's a little bit hard there. Now, what some people do is do what we've done. You raise the deductible so the premium is cheaper. Now, there's a new thing that's come out in recent years that many of you may know about. It's called a health savings account. Let me give you an example. You have you go and you say, I want to get insurance, health insurance for me and my family. And they say to you, okay, for you and your family, it's $900 a month with a $1,500 deductible and an 80-20 copay thing. And this, and you go, oh, man, I don't know if I can pay $900 a month. They said, well, I'll tell you what we could do. We could raise the deductible to $3,000, and it'll only cost you, you know, $520 a month or whatever. And now a lot of places, a lot of companies and a lot of things are offering health savings accounts that stay with a person and not necessarily with a company, in which it's like an IRA. The money you put in there is tax deductible. It can be used for health. And so what some people are doing is where they normally paid $900, they would say, give me a $4,000 deductible. It'll only be $300 a month. I'm taking the extra $600 and putting over here. And if I don't use it, next year I got $1,200 in there. And the next year I got $1,800 in there. And if you don't use it, it's gaining tax-free for you just like an IRA does. And you can use it for health things. In fact, that's what the church has set up for us, for me. I have an HSA that I have a $4,000 deductible, so I have to pay the first $4,000. So if I have in my HSA $4,000 in there saved, and I go to the doctor, I could spend it all, and then once I get to that point, then my insurance takes over after that. So the key is you got to get it built up. And so that's That's the only negative of an HSA or one of those deals, is if you have a loss in the first year or two before you've got it built up. Because if you have $8,000 in your HSA, you know it's never going to get below $4,000 in a year, because that's the most you could. That's the most it's going to be. So a lot of people look at this. I talked to John Murphy about it when we started mine through the church, and we did that about 3 years ago. He said that he had a number of clients who had come in and said, I got to get health insurance, and their bill might be $1,000. And they say, ooh, I can't pay $1,000. He'd say, well, you can do an HSA. We could get the premium down to $400, but what you need to do is put that $600 back. He said, so far, of all his clients, me and one other were actually putting the money in the HSA. All the rest were just saying, I'll take the chance. I'll have a lower health premium. And if I have a loss, I'll have to figure out how I come up with the money. So a lot of people do that. The best thing to do is put the money in your HSA so the money is there when you have, so that it'll meet your deductible. And just for your information, if you're worried about me at all, since we've been doing this for 3 years, and we, by the grace of God, I haven't gotten sick very much, or the family or anything like that. And so if I had a major thing where we had to go $4,000, I have $4,000 in there. So I'm not going to be out any money. I mean, it's my money. If I don't get sick, it's still my money, and it'll be mounting up for the future. But so just want you to know, that's not a bad deal. You might look into it. A lot of people are going to that because the health insurance just continually goes up. The rates do. I'm not sure it's going to go down. Only thing going down is stock market. But there is a third thing that I have for you. I just mentioned that HSA. The other thing is what they call disability insurance. Disability insurance is, in the event that you become disabled in something or you're not able to work, disability insurance helps provide income for you, which is replacement cost. Usually disability insurance is about 60% of what you were making. If you were making, I'm just making this up, you know, $1,000 a month, your disability might be $600 a month that they would pay for you, because you paid for it. It's an insurance that you pay for monthly, whether you ever use it or not. And some people say, well, that's not right fair. Well, that's called insurance. You're insuring. You don't really want something to happen. I've had people say, you know, I had my car insurance for 2 years, never had an accident, wasted that money. So No, you didn't. You recovered the whole time. You're not wasting it. That's what it's for. It's to provide for you in case something happens. Most replacement cost insurance about 60%. Usually there's a 30-day waiting period. I mean, I haven't got all the facts. I mean, things change, and there's so many different kind of products. So you'd go to somebody that you trust and say, talk to me about disability income. What I've heard Dave Ramsey say, and if you read his book, he talks about having health insurance, and he talks about having disability insurance. And I'm very fortunate. When I started doing insurance here, John Murphy's in our church. We got 3 or 4 men in our church that do insurance, and they're all incredible men. And so you could choose any of them. In fact, I have stuff with bunches of them. But John Murphy said to me, JB, you need to do this disability insurance. You need to do that just in case. And so I've had it. There's a third thing that Dave Ramsey is really talking about now, and it's called long-term health. What is it? Long-term that's what I have down. Long-term care insurance. Yeah, it looked like it said house, and I went, no, it can't be house. But like, if you're going to go into a nursing home, are you going to need long-term care? And I can't remember the age. I think he said if you're over 60, that's where you really need to start looking at long-term care insurance, just in case something happens and you have to go into a nursing home for years instead of it depleting everything that you have. That this would take care of that. He said that years past, people didn't use long-term care insurance much because people didn't live that long. But people are living longer and longer and longer now, and so that's the big three. So when you think about health insurance, you think about your normal health insurance, you think about disability insurance, and you think about long-term care insurance. So those are big three. Are there any questions? I'm not going to answer everything because there's a lot I just don't know, but I've... No, I haven't, but I don't think it's that bad, yeah, the way they talk. Any of y'all check prices on long-term care insurance? Any of you older people? Just kidding. Okay. Anything else under that? Let's go to the next thing, and that's life insurance. Life insurance. And most people don't even want to talk about life insurance. And they go, life insurance. Okay, there are three basic types of life insurance. First of all, A is term insurance. Term, we'll talk about it in just a minute. Let's just write them down first. There's term insurance. Then there's whole life insurance. That's B. They are on another page, but we're going to fill them out. And then the third one is sometimes called variable life or sometimes called universal life. It's according to the companies and it's according to how they do it. Now, let's talk a little bit about it. How many of you have read Dave Ramsey's book yet on anything? Have you read any of the part on insurance? What does he say? Anybody read any on the insurance, on life insurance? Who's read it? What does he say? Term. In fact, he says any other product is what? He says it's absolutely stupid. Okay, now, there are people that I know very well that sell insurance. So I don't go around saying that it's all stupid. I would say that unless we look at the three types, you got term. Let's see if we understand it. What term does this? You go and you say, I want to get some insurance, and I'm going to get $300,000. And it's in a term for, say, 20 years or 30 years or whatever you want to get. And what the point is, and I remember when I first started to talk work, because remember when I resigned from Mississippi State for about a year before I went to Dallas Seminary, I worked for a State Farm insurance guy, and so I had to learn a little bit about insurance. And then while my first 2 years at seminary, I worked for a State Farm guy. And I remember the first time I talked to him, I said, so what you're saying is a person gets this life insurance, and if they die, they get $300,000. He said, no, if they die, they get nothing. Somebody else gets $300,000. I went, oh, yeah, okay, I got you. Okay, so insurance, like term insurance, is that we have it maybe for 20 years or 30 years, and it covers that person's life, and if they were to die, their beneficiary gets $300,000, $400,000, whatever they decide to do. It's called term because it's for a term, and the purpose of this insurance is to protect the life. It's really for your family. And if we, when men come in and wives and they're getting ready to get married and all this stuff, and we talk about insurance, I said, especially young people, you can get term life insurance for it's just not very expensive at all. And I say to the guy, listen, if you were to die, what do you want to happen to your wife? Do you want her to have to go back to work? Do you want to have enough money that if you were to die, that she would have enough money to take care of everything, kids, things like that? I just want to show you a difference that a guy who's probably 25 years old could buy $500,000 for probably $25 to $30 a month. It's not very expensive. Now, the older you get, it's as in all insurance, the older you get, since you're getting closer to dying, it's going to cost more. It's going to cost a lot more for me to get insurance than some of you young people in this room. A lot more. And so the younger you are, you know, you get in, you know. And now, let me show you this. The next one was whole life, and whole life and universal life. Whole life is this. What they say is this. We're going to insure you, say, for $300,000, but it's not going to really have an ending to it necessarily, and you're going to put so much in every month. And one of their selling points that they tried to sell over the years is that it will make money. It will make money. It's like a savings program. The negative, and if you read Dave Ramsey, it makes sometimes 2 to 4%. Now, here's the problem. If you're 25 years old and you bought a $300,000 policy, you might buy that policy for, let's say it's $22 a month. If you're going to buy a $300,000 whole life policy and you're 25 years old, it may be $75 a month or more. So what people have always suggested that deal with this, that are people like Dave Ramsey, is go buy this for 22, take the rest of this money and invest it, and you're going to make better than 2 to 4% over the long time. And when you, I just don't even get it all in tonight, but if you read Dave Ramsey's book on the insurance, you'll find that what is promised sometimes under these whole life, universal life policies, that you're going to have it to $300,000 is going to make money. Well, if when somebody dies, they don't get the money, they get this right here. You can go get your money out of here, but you borrow from your own self, and you have to pay your own self back, and it comes off of this figure. So it's not exactly. I remember one time I sat down with a guy, And nobody in our church, nobody that we would know, because everybody that's ever dealt with me, especially people in our church, I trust them. I say, show me what we got, show what you got, and they're incredible. But I remember talking to a guy when I first came here in this town that doesn't go to our church, but he sat down and figured this deal out and showed and said, after 20-something years, you're going to have $800,000 and all this. And I went, really? Are you kidding me? I thought, that's pretty impressive. And then I realized that the numbers really didn't jive, and that it was like getting a 22% return every year for all these years. And then when I actually asked him, I said, now, if I were to die, I get this figure and the $800,000. And he went, well, you don't get both of them. I said, then what's the point of building this money up? Well, you can borrow against it. You can pull it out. I said, well, I don't want to borrow against my own money. So when you decide to get life insurance, whether it's whole life, whether it's variable life is a little bit different. Variable life is almost a cross between term and whole life. That's the third one there. It's a little bit different. It does better. And the reason it does better is because life insurance begin to realize that when people know the difference between whole life and term, they're not going to buy much whole life. So they came up with a different product called Variable Life. Anyway, just you check it out yourself. Do whatever you want to do on that. If you read Dave Ramsey, you read Ron Blue, you read Crown Financial Ministries, you read those guys, most of them would say that they do not recommend that you buy whole life or variable life. They recommend that you buy term insurance, because the purpose of life insurance is to protect your what? Your life, and not to make money, because you don't make the money. You don't make it. So that's all I'm going to say about that. Okay. Anyway, that's up to you, and you may know people, and you may sell life insurance yourself, and you may say, I don't like what you're saying. But anyway, that's what I look at. Now, one of the things, let me just tell you this. If a guy's got a salary and he's making $50,000 a year, they recommend that on your insurance that you get at least 8 to 10 times your annual salary for insurance. So they would probably say, here, $500,000. Because what they're really wanting you to do or say is, if you were to die, your family gets the $500,000 that they put in the bank and got 10% interest. They're getting $50,000 a year for them to live off of without touching the principal, and that's what you're making. So that they're trying to fix it where you don't have to lose your lifestyle and at the same time have enough money to generate that. And that's what you want to do. Any questions on life insurance? Yes.
But if you're not debt-free yet, do you recommend increasing that amount by the coverage amount by whatever balance you have on some of your debts?
That's not a bad. If your balance is $3,000 to $4,000 for credit cards, no. But if you're into debt 50 or well, yeah. Most of the time, this will take care of the mortgage. See, if you're living on $50,000 and you have a mortgage payment. When this comes out and you use this to remove your mortgage payment, then that takes care of, you don't have to have quite the $50,000 every year after that, because usually the mortgage is paid off by the life insurance immediately, so that there's not a house payment for the family, and that way they don't have to have the same amount of income. But you could do it, you know, if you're buying term insurance, you can say, we'll put another $100,000 on there for another $12, you know, stuff like that. Okay, yes. I don't think so. Not at the death, and then they get the money. They're not taxed. Isn't that right? You know the tax laws on that. Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah. That was the question? Yeah. You remember, I gave a handout a couple of weeks ago. I think one's back there about probating and wills and all that stuff. It can get pretty technical. And people, the best thing to do is have a will. And you tell where you want your stuff to go, because you don't want the state telling you where it goes, or it's all tied up for years and things like that.
We did through the Baptist Foundation, and you know, you get your will done and everything through them, and you allot 10%, and like, you know, we gave part of it to this church, and part of it to another Baptist organization, and then they pay for the expenses of having that done. So you're not out any money.
That's exactly
at this point in time.
I don't know if you heard what he said, but he actually had the Baptist Foundation come in and make a will for him. Their only requirement is it 10%? I can't remember. That 10% of what you were going to give away, you give to some Baptist thing, whether it's a Baptist church or an organization. I did that 19, 18 years ago. The Baptist came in and put together a will for me that we gave our 10% to this church. So, and they did the will for you free if you're going to give it to some Baptist organization. So if you're interested in saying, I would like to have a will and I don't want to have to pay any money to do the will, we'll call the Baptist for it. They'll come in and they'll have their lawyers come in and they'll set you up thinking. All they ask is 10% of what your estate is that would go to either like Countryside or another church or a Baptist organization or a children's home or whatever you want to do. Isn't that right? Yeah. So that's not a bad deal. Anything else? Yeah.
When dealing with term life, one thing I question was, okay, so let's say you do 25 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then let's say 24 years from now, Ryan has this really bad illness, and, you know, then how can he extend that because he's cut off at 25, well, and then maybe he's not insurable. Then where am I left as his spouse?
If you're insurable with that company, you're still insurable. They can't not insure you. Once you're insured, that's why they say a lot of times, get insured as soon as you possibly can, so that if you get uninsurable, they can't deny you anymore. Once you're with a company, they can't uninsure you on health insurance. I mean, on life insurance.
And when it expires?
Now, if it expires, that's different. But what you want to do, what they normally say is. Your plan is that as your savings increase, your savings would increase and your IRAs, your savings would be the amount of what you have your life insurance by the time your life insurance plays out. In other words, you have $500,000 by that time, and so you don't need it if he dies because you've got the money there to live off of. That's one of the kind of the deals, and that's where you have to sit down and figure out how can I, as I'm building my wealth, as I'm out of debt, as I'm doing this, I want to make sure that when my life insurance stops, I have the money that I would have if I didn't have the life insurance. That's what they're saying. I do. That's one of the questions. One of the things. That we had two questions that we want to call Dave Ramsey on, and one was the one he brought up that night. If you have a health insurance, like me, let's pretend. What if I said, should I call Dave and say, Dave, my deductible on my health insurance is $4,000. Should I have as my emergency fund $4,000 instead of $1,000, or say it was $1,500? That was one question we wanted to ask Dave. The other question I do want to ask him is sort of the same question about how do you make sure you've got this thing planned so that when your term insurance ends. Now, the other thing is, though, you know, because I got three different term policies. They're all going to end at different times. Over the years, I got one, and then I got a different one at another time. So, because you can't go back to a 20-year and say, let's add 10 more years to that 20-year. They don't do it that way. You just have to take another one out. But you just want to make sure that, because I've had people say, that's why you want whole life, because it'll keep going. Yeah, but it's costing you 10 times as much, and it doesn't gain any money. So just to say I want something going when I'm 70, you know, so you just got to look at it carefully. I think that's two questions I'd like to ask Dave, the one that Stephen came up with, and then that one about how do you plan this thing for the end. You know, there's Dave Ramsey, never says, this is one thing that I always want to talk to him about, is he never says anything about, he says, pay your cars off, right, and everything, but he never says, be saving for the next car. I'm assuming what he's thinking is 3 to 6 months living expenses and everything like that. And maybe that's where he's thinking that when your car tears up or when you get ready to get another car, you'll have the money to get that. But I always tell people is if you have a in your budget spending plan, you're putting $300 a month back, you're paying on your car payment. When you pay your car off, just keep paying that money to yourself and keep it in a fund so that when it's next time, you got it. That's how I do it. But I'd like to ask him those questions as well. Maybe some night we'll bring him in, get the phone, get it right here, and make some calls. Anything else? Okay, let's talk about homeowner's insurance, okay? Homeowner's insurance. This is coverage to protect your home. It's really your biggest asset for most people. It's the big thing you own. I mean, you may say, I got a car that's $30,000, I got a car that's $28,000, but a lot of homes are $100,000, $150,000, $200,000. I mean, that's a lot of money when you start thinking about something that you own that's worth that much money. If you have a debt on your home, the mortgage company is going to require you to have coverage. I mean, there's no doubt about that. So there are three aspects of homeowners insurance. Number one, there's what we call the dwelling. Number two is the property. And number three is liability. Let's think about it at the top of that next page, the dwelling. This is the coverage to repair or rebuild your home in case of a loss. This is the house itself. And nowadays they have policies that are called replacement cost. Okay? Here's what I'm talking about. You got this house, and now a lot of people with our economy the way it is, some houses and a lot of houses have gone down in certain parts of the country, but not in all of the country and only in certain cities. In a lot of places, houses are still going up even right now, even in the midst of this time. And so sometimes you may go and you buy this house and it's a $150,000 house. And then 7 years later, the thing is worth $185,000. And what you want to do is when you get your policy, you don't say, I just want to insure it for $150,000. What you want to do is insure it for what they call replacement cost, because if something happens to it 7 years down the road, it's not going to cost $150,000 to build it again. It's going to cost $185,000 to $190,000. So you want replacement costs. And most insurance companies, State Farm and all those, Farm Bureau, when you say, I want replacement cost on my policy. So you want to do that. Because houses tend to, you know, the truth is this, the materials and things keep going up, and so a house that took $120,000 to build 5 years ago is going to take $160,000, $170,000 to build now. And so you want the replacement cost on the house and not just a single figure. Because if you say, I'm going to insure this for $140,000, and then you have a loss, and then they say, yes, it's going to cost $185,000 to build it, and you go, my gosh, where am I going to come up with $45,000? So that's the thing. So you want to get replacement cost on it and to be able to rebuild the house. So this coverage, this dwelling, that's the thing. If something happens, tornado hits it, the roof, you know, things, you know, how many of you, you've lived here. How many of you have been through tornadoes, right? Has everybody been through a tornado? Man, yeah. I remember the first one I was really in when I was here, and it was like my second or third year here. It was the one that tore up the place over by the movie theater, tore up, and then the little boy got killed. Huh? Was that when it was? 1990. And I remember I was a little house on Will Rogers, and we had a radio. Sarah was not born. Catherine was about 2 1/2, and I went to Rotary. That night, I said, I don't want to go to Rotary. I'm going home. I don't want to go to Rotary. It's a good thing I didn't go to Rotary because the tornado hit. I got home, and Gene said, you know, it looks pretty bad. And I said, so we got one of the, I had a radio that, you know, didn't, it was a battery radio. So we turned it on, and you know how it is around here. They're telling you everything. And they were saying, with the tornado spotted, it's coming down Highway 51. And then they actually told us it was a 51 in Western. And then they talked about, I mean, we're following the thing. We said, you know, I think it's coming this direction. And it was, came right over. Well, anyway, I remember we got in the hall because we didn't have anything. We got in the hall. We took the mattress thing and put it on top of us and everything. But you know me, I kept getting up and I kept going and looking because I wanted to see what this thing looked like. And we had one of those wooden fences, you know, one of the wooden fences around the backyard. And I remember we had the sliding glass door. And so I'm looking and I watched and the fence just blew away. And I went, the fence just blew away. You know, it just blew away. The whole fence just blew away. And I looked, and everybody's fences are blown away. And you could see everybody, you know, because I thought, my gracious. And then, you know, the thing hit and tore up all those things, bounced kind of over our house, tore part of our roof off. It didn't do bad. But what did they do? They came out, and we had coverage. And they start saying, okay, we can fix this and this and this, and we'll pay you so much to fix your fence. And I mean, it's just, that's what insurance is all about. That's why you have it. That's on the property, the dwelling. The second part of it is called property, and that's your possessions. That's what you have in the house. And what many coverages do, if you have your house insured for $100,000, your property is $50,000. A lot of times it's half of what your dwelling is. So if you say, well, I got a $200,000 house, you got $100,000. But now you can change it. You can go to your agent and say, I've got a lot of jewelry. I've got this. I want this insured. And so they will insure all of those things. And there's even special policies you can get. When I worked with State Farm, I did mostly I could not do life insurance. You can't sell life insurance unless you're authorized to sell it. But you can sell health insurance and car insurance and house insurance because so I did that, and I help people do that sort of stuff. But you learn what, you know, and you tell a person, well, this is what this and this is what this is. So here's one of the things you want to do. You want to keep an inventory of your main stuff in case there is a loss so that you can know what's gone. And let me tell you what they tell you you can do now. You can use a video camera. You can just go and video. You don't have to write everything in the world down. Video what you have. Video stuff. And so that when somebody said, well, we had two pots, two crock pots. There they are. That's what they look like. We had this. Because sometimes you can't even remember what's gone if there's a fire or if there's a tornado or something. And, you know, Lord willing, we'll never have that kind of stuff happen. We'll just pray that it never happens to any of us. But Greg Smith, in 19... What was it, my 20th year here, right around 2000, 2001, they sent us on a cruise for my 20th anniversary. And the day we left, Greg Smith's house burned to the ground. And by the grace of God, we were gone. So they lived in our house while we were gone. We were gone for like 8 days, and they lived in our house. But their house completely burned to the ground. Most of y'all know, some of you went out there. You helped them. You tried to save their, they had a few things left, but... they're amazing people. Greg Smith's one of the greatest men I've ever seen, and he was so amazing. It was sort of like a Job. He said, Lord gives and the Lord takes away. He's an amazing man. But one of the things you got to be able to tell them, this is what I had. So the second aspect of house insurance is the property. The third thing is the liability. Liability that protects you, like if somebody falls or somebody gets hurt or all kind of different things. And you know what's so amazing is you don't even think about it, because when I grew up, in my generation, it's the summertime in Mississippi, and so you stay out until the street light comes on, which could be 9 o'clock at night because it's Mississippi and it's in the summer. And, you played in your neighbor's yard and you did everything in the world, and it was no big deal. Nowadays, if you fell down in your neighbor's yard, your mother came home and spanked you, first of all, for falling in your neighbor's yard. And your neighbor, nowadays, people fall down in your yard, what do? They sue you, And so you need liability insurance, and that's with the policies. And you can get extra liability insurance, and you can get even a greater amount than just comes with a normal policy. And bottom line, you go to somebody you trust, an agent that you trust, and you say, here's what I need. Now, when you buy a house, naturally, that banks, they're going to require you to have insurance. I mean, it'd be foolish not to have insurance, but they're going to require it because you don't really own the house. They loaned you the money. It's really their house, but you're getting it slowly. So bottom line. Now, there's another insurance a lot of people don't think about, and it's renter's insurance. And especially college students and people who are renting apartments or renting houses. And by the way, if people tell you, well, it's always foolish to rent, no, it's not. If you're not going to live in a place at least 3 years or longer, you should not buy. If you don't know for sure that you're going to live in a place for at least 3 years or longer, do not buy a house because you can't break even on it. And you'll lose money, so it's better to rent. And when you rent, you're not responsible for the for the dwelling part, but it's your stuff that's in there. And you can get renter's insurance that's not very expensive, that will cover your items, your couch and chair and clothes and everything like that, in case something were to happen. And that's called renter's insurance, of course. It's not very expensive at all. I used to sell it when I was at State Farm. In fact, I was a single guy living in an apartment. I had renter's insurance. I had insurance because what if the place caught on fire and burned up? You think the guy who owns the apartment is going to pay for my clothes and stuff? He's going to say, no, I got my building insured. I don't have your stuff insured. That's your stuff. This is my stuff. So you probably, if you don't own a home and you're living someplace with your possession thing, and you probably want to look at getting some renter's insurance to cover your possessions. Okay. That takes us to the last area, and that's auto insurance. Now, once again, when we start thinking about car insurance, if you have children, if you have teenage children, you know that I remember when I was working with State Farm, and a guy had, he was a family guy, and he had a car, and his insurance might be $250 every 6 months. And then he got a teenage son, and it went to $1,400 every 6 months. Or he had a teenage daughter, and it went to $1,200 every 6 months. And that's why when these guys get their sons and get cars, they get something that they don't have anything but liability insurance on, because they can't afford the rest of it. It's amazing how much this stuff costs, especially on teenage drivers. But automobile insurance is, you know, once again, if something happened to your car, you want to be able to most of the time get it fixed, unless it's just a clunker and you're just driving it until it finally falls apart, and then you're not gonna, you got your money saved back to get you another something. If you owe money on your car, you will be required to have what they call full coverage, which is comprehensive and collision and all that. Let's talk about the different kinds of coverages on an automobile insurance. Number one is what they call comprehensive. Comprehensive. And the best way to describe comprehensive, it deals with things that are like acts of God, nature, floods, rocks, windshields. If a rock came up and hit your windshield, if it got flooded, if a limb falls out of a tree and hits your car, I mean, these are called comprehensive, and it covers those kind of things. Okay. The second one is called collision insurance. And this covers the damage to your car. If you hit something, say you're backing out of your driveway and you're not watching what you're doing and you hit a post and it messed up the back of your car, your collision insurance is going to pay to get your car fixed. Now, there's a deductible. And just like the other kind of things we talked about, the higher the deductible, the less the insurance cost. Some people say, I'm going to get a $1,000 deductible or a $500 deductible or $200 deductible. Well, if it's a $200 deductible, you're going to pay more for the insurance because you're only going to pay the first $200. If you have a $500 deductible, you're going to pay the first $500. You back into the pole and the guy says it's $800 to fix it. You got a $500 deductible. Insurance company is going to send you $300. Because that's just what it is. You need collision coverage. Now, so if you're driving your car and you get a windshield broken or a light broken or some act of God, as they call it, that's comprehensive. If you hit something and tear your car up and you need to fix your car, that's collision. The third thing is called liability. And liability protects the other person. If you're driving and you run into the back of somebody's car and it's your fault, your liability will pay for their car. Your collision will pay for your car. And it's by law, you have to have liability insurance by law. Now, some people ignore the law. And you may have been in an accident and they don't have any insurance, and it's their fault, and their car insurance is supposed to fix your car. And sometimes that happens. But what happens if you have a good insurance company? Your insurance company will fix your car. You'll be out your deductible. They will sue the people and try to get your money back and their money back. That's what happens. Let me tell you this. I work for State Farm. You allow your insurance company to fight for you and to do it. It's not your job to track all these people down and make them do what's right. That's why you have insurance. And you say, go after those people. I want my car fixed. And I'm not saying go after Sue. I'm saying it's your. When somebody hits you, you don't have to be the one trying to make all these phone calls. You go to your insurance company. First of all, you'll go to their insurance and file on their insurance. Sometimes they'll deny it. They'll say, well, our client said that you hit them, not that they hit you. And what you say then is, what are you talking about? And you say, okay, I'll have State Farm call you. Because your person hit me, I got the police report. And we're going to talk about, yes.
I've heard a lot of the techniques that insurance companies are doing now, and I've heard it happen in court that if they somebody hits you and they'll come up and they'll say, well, it's 25% your fault because you didn't stop.
Oh, you mean they try to place the insurance companies are doing it, not necessarily the police, but the insurance companies. Yeah, are getting out of paying the whole thing. You're right. Nowadays, it's gotten to be a mess, and that's why you want to have your vehicles covered the best that you can. You want liability because, listen, if you hit somebody or tear something up, you want your insurance to pay for that. And liability has no deductible for you. If you hit another guy's car and you did $10,000 damage to his car, you're not out a penny. Your liability insurance pays for that. Now, you're out your car if you got $1,000 worth of damage and you had a $500 deductible and you want to get your car fixed, it's going to cost you $500 to get your car fixed. But if your liability, there's no deductible on your liability. Just like there's no deductible on your liability in your house. If somebody falls down in your yard and sues you for $10,000, there's no deductible there. Your liability takes care of that. That's why it's called liability insurance. There's a fourth thing under car insurance, which is called medical, that can cover you and your passengers. There is also another thing that's on there called uninsured motorist that you have that covers you just in case you are hit by somebody that doesn't have insurance. So there's a number of things. And when you go to your insurance agent, to be real honest, what you want to do is you want to talk to them about how and having as high, really a high liability on your car. You want that. It's going to cost you a little bit more money, but it's your protection if you were to hit somebody. Because you do not. Did you see the commercial the other day? I saw the commercial the other day, and it's a young boy sitting in the courtroom. I mean, it's a dramatization thing. And here's his mom and daddy, and then here's the guy on the other side, and the judge, they are ruling in favor of the person. Obviously, the young boy had a car wreck, wasn't watching what he's doing, and he hit somebody and did lots of damage, like $100,000 worth of damage. But their liability was like $50,000. And so they say, we award this person $100,000. And, of course, they look over at each other and realize their liability is only $50,000. And they thought, well, how are they going to get $50,000? And the other guy stands up and says, he's got to have college money. He's got to have that. We're going to get every penny they've got. And they can. They can. So you want to protect yourself. When you start talking about insurance, then it gets scary sounding. You got to protect yourself. But, you know, God's in control. But, you know, you need to have, that's why you have insurance. That's what it's called. So the big four there is comprehensive, collision, liability, and medical. The other day, Sarah was at the high school. She comes out to go eat lunch, and somebody had backed into her car and drove off. She says, we're going to make them fix it. I said, who are they, honey? Well, I don't know who it is, Daddy. I said, well, how are we going to have them fix it? Well, will it cost us money? Of course it will. It'll cost us the deductible to fix it. And that's when you have dishonest people who hit you and leave, hit and run. You ever hit somebody and they weren't around? I have. I hit somebody one time. They weren't there. And I put my name, address, I put everything. I put it in the car. And in fact, I stayed there as long as I could. Nobody ever came out. I asked people, did anybody know whose car this is? And they called me and they said, thank you for leaving your note. I said, I hit you. I'm sorry. I didn't see you when I backed out. I said, I have State Farm and you can call right here. I mean, that's what you had to do. I mean, you can't do damage to somebody's stuff and just drive away if it means nothing. So that happens sometimes. Catherine's car, which was my old car, right after I got it to her, actually, I had it and somebody hit it in the parking lot at Brahms and tore my bumper off. Some college guy, it was a young guy, and he tore the bumper off. He came back in. He said, does anybody have this little red Toyota thing? And I went, yeah, I do. He said, I think I tore your bumper off. I went, thanks, man. You know, I went after. I said, I know you didn't mean to do it. And he did. And I got it fixed. And I said, well, I got a new bumper on this 1997. And then I gave it to Catherine, and Catherine's in the road, and a guy runs in the back of her, so we get the back fixed. I said, well, now we got the front and the back fixed. And then Catherine runs in the back of somebody. We got more. I said, if we keep this up, this will be a new car before we're through. At least on the outside. Okay, when you if you have a car and it gets older, and sometimes they say if you don't owe any more money on it, and it gets older, then you can take things off like the collision because it may be worth less to fix it than what you're paying to insure it after a certain number of years. Sometimes they say when a car's 8 years old or when a car gets less than $3,000 worth, you may drop the collision if you want to. Now, that's if you don't owe any money on it. Sometimes people still owe money on cars and things like that. What do you do if you're in an accident? Four things. Number one, call the police. If you can, you want them to give a police report, especially if it's somebody else's fault. Because if they don't, and you don't have that record of anything, and you start dealing with insurances, they'll say, well, whose fault was it? And the other guy says, it wasn't my fault. And you say, yeah, it was. But there's no record that says whose fault it is. Sometimes in bigger cities, police won't come if it's a little accident. That's where you run into problems. But you should call the police if you're in an accident. Number two is you get the other person's driver's license number. That way you can find them if you have their number. You can find them. The third thing is get the other person's insurance information. Let me tell you what, if you're the one at fault, be sure and get the other person's insurance as well. Now, what a lot of people, sometimes people are going to do, they hit you. And they say, don't call the police, I'll just take care of this. Because they're afraid of two things. Number one is they don't want the police coming because they may have some tickets or things. Number two is they don't want this reported to their insurance because they don't want to turn in their insurance because they don't want their insurance to go up because they've already had several accidents. I still say call the police. Even if they say to you, it's my fault, I'll take care of it, don't worry about it, you still call the police because they're really saying that right then, but they may not say that a week later. And if they want to pay you and not if you don't turn in it, you just say, okay, give me the money. I'm going to get the estimates. I'm going to get exactly what it's going to cost to fix it, and then you can give me the money to fix it. If you don't want to turn it to the insurance, I understand that. But you make sure they're going to give you the money. Show me the money, right, before you do it. I did say get insurance information, right? Number four, you know what's good to have? This may sound funny at first. One of those disposable cameras in your glove compartment, and if somebody hits you, you take the pictures and say, this is what happened right then. This is how they hit me, because there's no telling what can happen. And that way you actually have the record of this is the damage that was done right then. Yeah.
There are some crazy situations, like one time I was sitting still, and a girl hit me from one bumper to the other, just all the way down the side of my car.
Oh. Well, yeah, that's wild. Let me tell you this. Normally, and I work for State Farm, that if I got a brand new car today and did not call State Farm, was in an accident, it's covered. They cover you. Because you're insured by them, and you just said, I got a car. I mean, sometimes you can get a car and wait 2 weeks and forget and call them and say, I got this car 2 weeks ago. And they say, okay, you're covered. Most insurance companies will do that. This other company didn't. But most will do that because that you have insurance with them. And I was so surprised. In my life, I'd have a car, and I might have the same car sometimes I've had cars as 10, 11, 12 years. When I work at State Farm, there are people, they're changing cars sometimes every 6 months. That guy says, hey, my 82, I just got me an 84. I go, okay. He'll call you. I'm just getting it right now. I was amazed at how often people change cars. Insurance people like that, but it was amazing to me. Now, let me tell you, insurance you do not need. Okay, number one, you do not need mortgage life insurance. Now, you know that when you buy a home and if you don't usually have an 20% down, they'll make you put, what do they call it, PMI? Yeah. But some people will say, no, what you need to do is you just need to protect yourself just in case you got where you couldn't make your payment. So you need to get some mortgage life insurance. No, you don't. It's about 10 times what a term policy would cost. If you were worried about it, go get you some term insurance for 1/10 of the money. So don't ever buy this mortgage life insurance somebody's offering you if they act like it's going to be something. Number two is don't ever buy credit card insurance. They will make your payment for you if for some reason you can't make your payment. Oh, my gracious. There's some really gullible people sitting out there, let me tell you. You don't need that insurance, okay? That's just powerful. So we looked at a lot of insurance. We looked at health insurance and life insurance and homeowners insurance and car insurance. And the truth is, if you have cars, you need to have insurance. If you have a house, you need to have insurance. And if you got any kind of possessions and you live in an apartment, you need the insurance. And the truth is, you need some kind of health insurance in case something happens to you so that you won't be out thousands of dollars. And you probably need life insurance. Well, unless you're totally single by yourself and have nobody dependent on you in any way, shape, or form, and it wouldn't matter if you died, and so why live anyway? But most people, you want some type of life insurance, especially if you're married, family, that kind of thing. You want that, okay? That's not a bad idea. That's not a bad idea. Even if there are places, you know, I talk to people and I say, you have any life insurance? Yeah, where I work. I said, how much you got? I think they got me a $10,000 policy. I said, well, that's going to really help your wife for the next 10 years, isn't it? $10,000? That may bury you. So that's true. Some companies will have a life insurance policy for you, which would probably be enough to bury you. Nowadays, burials are what? You may know the figure on burials. Huh? It's about 8,000, between 6 and 8, or 6 and 10. Between 6 and 10 is just according. Anything else before we move to taxes? Taxes. Nobody likes to pay taxes. But as some people have recently said, you have to be a patriot and pay more taxes. I'm sorry, I can't stand that. Less taxes, what we want. Less taxes, less government. Government is real good at fighting wars if you let them fight the war. You tell them the military is really good if you say, go fight the war, they'll whip anybody in the world and they'll do it in a matter of days. But the government's not great at many other things. They're just not that great at stuff. That's why we don't want the government taking over all of these companies. That's called what? What's that called? Socialism. And we're becoming socialistic. We already let them take over all our housing industry, haven't we? That was not a good idea. $700 billion was not bailout. It wasn't a bailout. Taking over what? Did they already do it? They're about to. Maybe the government will give all of us $100,000 apiece. Yeah. Taxes will be $101,000. Yeah. Let's think about taxes for just a second. We have an obligation to pay our taxes that we're supposed to. Number one. This is number one on these. We have a responsibility to pay taxes. What does the Bible say? Render under what? Render to Caesar what belongs to Caesar. Romans 13, we're to obey the laws of our government. We should pay taxes. And let's say it this way. I wish that they were fair taxes. When Paul wrote, pay your taxes, when Jesus said, pay your taxes, it was one of the most corrupt governments in the world. So he doesn't say, if they're a good government, pay your taxes. He says, you do, as a citizen of whatever country you're in, you do what you're supposed to do. So we have the obligation to do that. I would wish that as our government, it would be less and less taxes and less big government and all of those kind of things. But whatever it is, we have the responsibility to pay our taxes. Number two, don't give the government your money. Now, let me tell you what I mean by that. And there's two philosophies on this that a lot of people do. There's some who say this, that I'm just going to let them take out of my check, and then when I get to the end, I'm going to get a big refund. I'm going to get $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 back, and that's my refund. But what you've done, actually, is you've loaned the government your money for a year, and you haven't got any interest off of it. You've given it to them, and then you act like they're giving you a prize. That's your money. You know, I have people say, I got a big refund. It's your money. It was your money to begin with. You know, when they say, I'm going to give you a tax rebate, that's your money. They haven't given you anything. The only money they have to operate with is your money. Government didn't make up the money. It's your money. So a lot of people say, Don't try to get a big refund. It would be better. Now, there's two philosophies. There's some people say, I don't want to worry about it. I don't want to worry about it. I want the refund at the end. That's up to you. But some people say, why don't you get it where when you get your tax thing, it's about even, or maybe you're going to get just a little back. That means you've had more of your money all year instead of them taking it and then giving it back to you. So anyway, that's just the philosophy. You think about what's best for you, but the refund is really your money that you've probably paid in too much for the year. Okay. The third thing is take your deductions. There's some people who file, you know, and get the deductions, and some people just do the whatever short form, whatever they call it. And because, just be honest on me, mine is so complicated because as a pastor, I'm the only occupation in the United States that is both self-employed and employed by an employer. So I'm a double. I have to pay the, what is it, 14 point something. Because I'm considered self-employed, but at the same time I work for the church. It's the only occupation that's both, and it's really weird. And so years ago, I couldn't really figure out how to make sure I'm doing it right. So for a number of years, I've had somebody do my taxes for me, and I'll talk about that one in just a minute. But at least I know I'm getting everything he knows that's a deduction, that's the right thing. And sometimes nowadays, I think with the computers and these things that you can put the tax stuff on there and you put all the information in, and they're really good about making sure you get the right stuff. I think, since I haven't done mine myself, I've had someone else do it. But you just want to make sure that if you're going to, you know, get your deductions, make sure you get everything that's coming to you because it's your money and you want to get back everything you can possibly get back. The fourth thing is I have here, file yourself if you can because I think it's cheaper. But some are so complicated, and I know people who have businesses and they say, I can't keep up with all this. I have to have an accountant. I have to have a tax guy that does this for me. And so it's just up to you. My daddy, I remember, back in our day, he always did our taxes, but I don't think it was quite as complicated in those days. I just don't think it was. In your little book, you have the last page of your thing. There's a very simplified tax form. If you see what it says, how much did you make last year? And then it says, send it in. See, isn't that what it feels like, right? Send it in. That's taxes. We are responsible as citizens of this great nation to pay our taxes, but we should be wise and pay the least amount we can pay. I mean, pay what is really we should pay. I remember talking to John Nelson, who does my taxes, and I said, John, I want to do it right. I mean, because, you know, as a pastor, I said, I just want it to do right. He says, yeah, you want to do it right, but you don't want to pay more than you should. I mean, we want to do what's right, but you don't want to pay more than you should. Let me tell you, this is going to sound so bad. When I first came here, I mean, I didn't make any money. You know, the church was so small. But after a couple of years, I had a guy in town who was a nice man, and he was a tax guy. But his philosophy was make sure he was covered. In other words, he didn't want to send in a tax deal for me that the government would come back and say, you didn't take out enough taxes. So I mean, we'd be taken out every 3 months, you know, and when I get to the end of the year, I owe another $2,000. And I'm going, where am I going to come up with this money? And somebody then told me, well, John Nelson is one of the great men in town, and I ended up being his next door neighbor. So I went to John and I said, John, because John was helping with the church tax, you know, stuff. And I said, John, will you do my tax? He said, sure, I'll do it. The first time, he said, JB, you're going to get back about $1,800. I said, I've been paying an extra $1,000. How did I get back $1,800? This was years ago. I don't have the money now. But anyway, he said, JB, I looked at your form. The guys, he's making sure you're paying every bit you can pay. He said, there's two views on this thing. Pay everything you can pay so they won't come after you. The other is pay what you really owe. And so I was, for two or three or four years, I was paying much more than I should have paid. So I'm breaking about even right now. So we're responsible. One final tip. Beware of the rapid refund places. Do not go and somebody will say to you, listen, get your refund now. Show us your tax thing, what you're going to get back. We will loan you that money now. How much are you going to pay back to those people? What percentage? Huh? What do you think you're going to pay? What do they charge? 22%, 25%? Isn't that a rip? Just to get money a little early? What about those places you go to and they cash your check for you fast or something? What are they doing? They're taking your money. Why is it? And who goes in there to do that? What kind of people? Poorer people. Why do the poor people get ripped off? Because they don't know any better. Say, can't you wait another month? Would you like to lose 25% of your money just because you can't wait a month? It's ridiculous. Don't go to those places. They will rip you off. They're bottom feeders, as Dave Ramsey says. They will rip people off. People are at jams. They got to have money. They need $2,000. They go in there and they'll charge them 25 to 30% interest to loan them that money. It's just not right. In the Bible, if you know that Israel was not to loan money to fellow citizens. I mean, not they could loan money, but not for interest. And if they loaned money to a foreigner, they could not charge high interest. They couldn't do it. They could not take advantage of people. They wouldn't do that. And I here's my thing. If one of you came to me and said, Jimmy, I need to borrow $100, I would not loan you $100. If I got the $100, I'm going to give it to you. I'm not going to loan it to you because I don't want every time you see me saying, I'll give you $100. I don't want that. If I gave you the $100 and you said, I'm going to give it back to you someday, I say, hey, that's up to you, man. And then you gave it back to me, that's fine. But I'm not going to loan you $100 where every time you see me, you're saying, I owe you money. Just give it to the person. And if you can't give it to them, then don't loan it to them because, you just can't do it. Well, may we be wise in our purchases and our use of insurance in paying and in paying our taxes. Okay, got any questions, thing? Any questions, comments, input, anything about this area? What's next time? What does it say? I can't even remember the next lesson. Huh?
Our church.
Church. This is a unique one. How do churches do budgets? How do we do our budget? See, I have seen churches where they say, last year we got in $500,000. We're going to trust God that we'll get in $550,000 this year. What if he doesn't bring the money in? Did he guarantee you he's going to bring that money in? How are we going to trust him to do something he didn't promise he was going to do? I've seen churches say, we've raised our budget 20%. We're trusting God. I said, no, you're not. You're an idiot. You're an idiot. Would you say, my salary's $1,000 a month, but I'm going to start spending $1,200, and I'm trusting God that he'll give me the extra $200? You wouldn't do that. You'd be an idiot. Well, why would you do anything with a church, something like a church and a budget there? Why would you just assume God's going to give you money that he hasn't given you or promised you? So we'll talk about that next week in this. Stuff. Okay, any questions, comments, anything? Yeah, he says you're an idiot. Boy, I saw him. I was listening to him the other day because when I work out, I listen to him on my podcast. And some guy called in, and you know, immediately by what the guy's saying, you know Dave is fixing to eat him alive, you know. Because this guy's going, well, according to the... And Dave said, sir, and then he... Boy, it was good. It was so good. Finally, after the phone hung up, Dave said, what an idiot. All right, anything else? Heavenly Father, what a great night. Thanks for our class. I just love it, Lord. Thank you for our time that we get to come together and study and talk about all these things. Lord, all we want to do is be wise with what you've given us. We want to bring glory to you. We just want to do the things that you have for us to do so that you get all the honor and the glory. And so, Lord, just use us for all of this. We thank you for Jesus and eternal life, and we thank you for everything you've given us because we know everything we have comes from you, and may we use it for your glory. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.